This is Mike TV, episode 54 for the week of October 16th, 2020. We are your Mike TV hosts, Lisa and Dean. Hello, Dean.
Hi, Lisa. It's been a while.
Oh, has it? Hey, Dean, guess what? We're back.
Hey, but potentially if you just listened to last episode, maybe you're catching up. So really, it's only been like 30 seconds for you.
Hopefully. We have had a hiatus. Sorry, Roby.
Well, not sorry, Rose. Roby, blaming Roby. If you have listened to our previous episode, episode 53, where we had Roby as a guest, apparently, basically, he infected our podcast with the internet lag that he had that night. And it's only, we actually recorded this 6 weeks ago. It's just now coming out. No, for real, we just haven't wanted to watch those Big Bang Theory episodes. And I don't think either of us still have. But hey, Roby, we're going to get to him one day.
Roby, I'm sorry. To anybody out there who has been wondering where we've been, I'm sorry. It's all me. I'm still here. I just have been so busy. It's no excuse. When you commit to a podcast, dang it, you commit. But work and personal and just life and classes I'm taking, everything's just gotten in the way. And anyway, but we're back.
Yes.
We're back to a work-life podcast balance.
No one was sick or anything like that.
No. So
just in case you were wondering as far as if it, in that instance with what's going on. But no, it wasn't anything like that. We just busy schedules.
Haven't been watching any TV.
Yeah.
How can I call myself Mike TV when I'm letting my name down, my namesake.
No. Sorry, we're going to get back into it now.
We are.
Football sweeps.
We are. We're getting back. It's back. We're back. And glad to be back because there are some shows that we talked about wanting to come back and do episode by episode. But you know what? We talked it through. We like our format where we just loosely talk about all the TV that's worth watching. So I don't know that we're going to go back to an episode by episode, but there are certainly two shows tonight that we're going to speak prominently about, and that's Fargo and The Boys. But, you know, before we dive into those, we have other shows and other things we've been watching. Well, you have. I haven't been watching a whole lot other than Fargo and The Boys, which is all I've had time to keep up with, thankfully, because they're amazing. But what have you been watching, Dean?
Well, I've had a little bit of time on my hands the past couple of weeks, so I have dove into a lot of shows. I've been binge-watched like several seasons of several things, some newer things, some older things, but trying to catch up on a few things we've talked about in the past, but also a lot of new shows that are going on right now. One show that we talked about that I'll go ahead and throw this out because I know you've seen it before too, so we can talk a little bit about it, is I finally caught up on season 2 of Cobra Kai and binged all of that literally yesterday.
It's the most wonderful show. I love it so much. Already renewed for season four, by the way. Yeah.
It does such a good job. And I remember this when I watched the first season, 2 years ago when it first came out? Because I watched the first season as it came out. Mm-hmm. But this show does such a good job of like taking that, you know, it's clearly it was created as a fan service to 80s nostalgia of Karate Kid, right? It's like, this was always kind of the idea of what if Danny was actually the bad guy and Johnny was actually the good guy, because that's always been like a theory from Karate Kid, and that really is what spawned this creation. And even though they're both kind of the good guy and the bad guy, but that's but it does such a good job of being like a tribute to Karate Kid, because the way that they film some of the montages, the music they use,
it's amazing.
It's there's still those 80s vibes, the 80s movie vibe to it. So it's a little corny at times, cheesy, but it's so good. It's so good. I love it.
It works. The writing is great on the show. The comedy and the dramatic moments are so good. The character development, incredible.
Billy Zabka deserves – I'm surprised he hasn't been nominated for something. He's the best.
Agree. He was so good this season. I have the biggest crush on him. He and Ralph Macchio, too. Really good.
Yeah, Macchio does a good job.
And the kids in the show. So I have to pay homage to one of my other favorite podcasts, of course, we all know Radio Labyrinth is, of course, our favorite podcast. But I have this podcast that I listen to called Extra Hot Great, where, of course, they talk about TV, and they've been doing it for like 10 years. So they're podcast pros on TV, my heroes, really. And one of them on that show, so I'm just going to pay straight up homage to him, David T. Cole. He says the funniest things. And he was talking about Cobra Kai because he, like you, just has now watched it since it's come on Netflix. And he was like, here's the thing about Cobra Kai. In a world where everything revolves around karate, it's karate town, if you will. They're they're all stuck on this, you know, a dojo being opened up, which in the grand scheme of things in a real world would not make a hill of beans difference. But in karate world, it matters. And, you know, in this tournament where everybody's all into it because it's karate world. And so he just kept going on and on about how it's karate world, but how the show works. And I was like, he has nailed it. That is so perfect and so on the nose for exactly what this show is. You try to explain it to somebody and it just sounds on paper so stupid. And even saying, hey, it's karate world sounds stupid, but it's not. It's actually a really, really good show. Really good show. I got my sister-in-law and her family all into it. Her teenage kids. Do your kids watch it? I mean, her kids love it.
No, my girls aren't old enough for the. In fact, I was even thinking. I even thought about like if they made a PG-13 version of this, because the language is just too much a little bit, especially with Johnny. But if they lowered that, it actually would be a really good family show, because I think it does a good job of showing the teen drama in it, you know, along with the adult drama. There's some empowering stuff for, you know, nerds, you know, where the geeky kids become, you know, confident with this concept. The girls become confident. They're badass in it too. Mm-hmm. I actually think there's a lot of stuff that is good for maybe older teens to watch this.
Yes.
Just like Karate Kid, you know, mm-hmm. the idea of it.
It embodies the spirit of the first Karate Kid movie. If you ever loved that movie, I tell everybody, if you ever loved that movie in any way, which I did as a kid, I cherished that movie, then there's no doubt in my mind you will like this show. 100%. And I can only see how it's impossible to not like this show.
Yeah, and I like that it does a good job of making fun of, you know, Johnny's whole idea is he's the one who is... Even though he grew up with everything, you would think, you know, he doesn't know how to use computers or smartphones. I love when he texts someone. He's like, hi, I'm texting you from my Facebook, which is an app on my smartphone. Like, he writes all that out. You know, he doesn't know how to use that. And he's the one who's, you know, against all the pussification of America and everything. But they don't make it like it's not political at all. So it doesn't throw any of that in your face. There's even the idea of when, you know, and this isn't a spoiler for it, but Danny puts out the commercial for his Miyagi-Do dojo, and people are calling him, you know, saying he's culturally appropriating Asian culture, and he has no idea why. He's like, but this is literally what I was taught by an Asian man. What's going on here?
Yeah.
But I like how they make that funny without it being, like, preachy in any kind of way. It's just a good modern show, but based on people who still have thoughts from, like, that 80s time period moving forward.
Yeah.
But without making it weird or making it, there's no, like, you know, even though there are messages, I guess, there's really not a, like, this, you know, throw in your face message about the show. It's a fun show that has good character development. People learn things in it, which is cool, but it's not making a big statement about anything.
Well, we're supposed to believe that, like, Reseda, where it's located, right? Just like Karate Kid movie. You know, like, I guess Johnny never left Reseda and therefore never, you know, advanced beyond the 80s. Like, he's stuck in the 80s. So he refused to grow up. Still drives that same car that he, you know, drove in the movie and, you know, all of it, right? So I know. But his deficiency with technology is funny. His, you know, and having to learn it from his students. It is, to me, it does have really strong family values. And I also like where I know I love Riverdale, but I'm typically not one that's all into teen dramas. And because I feel like people write teens like they're adults, and then it then it feels stupid. Like Beverly Hills 90210. I love watching that show to make fun of it, but there are no teenagers on the face of the planet that speak like that or look like that for, you know, for that matter. Well, like,
say you have, when you have 30 year olds.
Yeah, right. They're all 30.
Teenagers,
but these are all realistic acting and looking teenagers, because they are teenagers, you know, braces and all. And they actually speak like teenagers. And I like that. I have to give credit to the writing on the show. It's very
strong. Have one of the kids who he's never had a speaking line, but one of the kids who was in Cobra Kai the first year, and then he was one of the ones who moved to Miyagi-Do. He's actually a former student of mine who's an extra on the show. So yes, like it's literally teenage high school age kids who are playing high school age kids.
And do you remember, this will be the last thing I say about it, but do you remember when I watched it, it's way back when we first started podcasting, you hadn't watched it yet. I was like, ooh, have you watched Cobra Kai season 2? And you were like, not yet. And I was talking about how there was a whole bunch of scenes filmed at DeKalb, North DeKalb Mall, which is like
right,
you know, a hop, skip, and a jump from my house. I don't know if you recognize it, but anytime they were running around the mall and like when they were in the comic book shop, that was straight up. Even the marquee outside of the comic book shop wasn't even changed. They barely even changed hardly anything, and straight up just shot it in that mall.
That's cool. So, I was actually wondering where – I knew it's filmed in Atlanta, and I was wondering what mall that was.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember that you told me that.
I mean, that mall is dead zone. I mean, it is – I mean, I'm sure they went in there and filmed, and, like, there weren't even anybody – they didn't have to
tell
anybody.
It made me wonder if it was Gwinnett Place again, since that's where they filmed, you know, all the Stranger Things.
Right. So, I guess all right, malls so that's what are I dead watched. Zone right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So, let's see. I watched that. Mm-hmm. And then I've also been watching, hold on just a second, give me half a second real quick. All right, sorry about that. So another thing I've been watching is then the finale of this comes out. Let's see, we are recording this. By the time this comes out, the finale is probably already played. Mm-hmm. But the third day on HBO. The third
Jude
day
Law.
Is a,
mm-hmm.
yeah, a miniseries. Like, this is a legit miniseries. In fact, the whole premise of it, it's only 6 episodes, and the premise was it was originally supposed to be released in 2 parts. The first 3 episodes were supposed to come out back in May or April, mm-hmm. and they got delayed because of COVID, and so they had just started releasing the – and then they were going to release the second 3 episodes starting 2 weeks ago, which is when mm-hmm. the second of the 3 started. They ended up releasing the first 3 back in September. And so, yes, it's 3 episodes.
Well, wait a second.
6 episodes total.
It's a British show. And so I think when it was delayed, now it's airing basically in sync with how it's airing in Britain, right? Like, and you know, like British shows will air and then we get them 6 months later or whatever. But because of the delay and because of the change of schedule, now it's like airing in Britain Sunday night and then HBO airs at Monday night, right?
Yes, but I do think that they still even were originally supposed to split the 3 episode quote seasons because they're based off of spring and then this is winter and then they're and I'll talk about the summer if you don't know about that in a minute. So
I've watched the first 2. Yeah. I will say I know I'm not current, but I love it. So creepy and weird. Wicker Man.
Yeah, the premise is very Wicker Man. So I went into this knowing nothing about it. I just saw it on HBO. Yep. I knew it was only like a few episodes, so I was like, I'll watch it. And the first 10 minutes, I almost turned it off because I was like, oh, it's just like the Wicker Man, right? Like random guy shows up on some weirdo island. There's about to be some kind of weird harvest festival or something. Mm-hmm. You know, like clearly this is a Wicker Man, that movie that came out, Midsommar, that came out a couple years ago.
Right.
You've heard this story or seen this story in a lot of things. But I got really hooked in it because the first episode and this, like, they're super trippy, weirdo episodes. Like, you don't really know what's going on. There's a lot of just, like, I mean, like you said, really weirdness, some weird flashbacks, and the characters are all, overly kind of too nice and too creepy. And so I really got into it. Jude Law does a good job in it. And you said you've only watched the first 2, right?
Mm-hmm. And so, I will say, the little things, like it's an island that has this causeway, this like, you know, couple mile long causeway that is mostly covered by water and you can only get across the causeway at certain times of the day when the water recedes. or the tide is back. And like,
yeah, it's a real island.
The first couple of episodes, he keeps trying to leave the island. He can't, he keeps missing his opportunity. And it is like, oh dude, that is fucked up. And it's clear the town is trying to prevent him from leaving the island. Also, it is freaky.
So it's messing with my head. Like, yeah, episode three, which is the end of the spring saga, is batshit crazy. You find out why Sam, who is Jude Law, is there. You find out his connections to this island. You find out what's happened to his son, all this stuff. I mean, like, everything is pretty much revealed. But then there is a pretty large, not necessarily cliffhanger, it actually resolves a lot of the stuff from the first two episodes. But it does kind of end, and you're not really sure what's going to happen next. And then, so see, I didn't even realize that then the next three episodes were almost going to be like a different season.
Okay.
So the next three episodes are called Winter, and they are focused on Helen, who actually we find out to be Sam's wife, and his two daughters have now shown up on the island. And
okay.
So now they are trapped on this island, but the island is a lot different than it is in the first three. It's not happy and ready for a festival. It's dark and dreary, and you can tell something bad has happened. And so it's a much different feeling for the next three. So it does a good job of making you feel like these are two different seasons of a show.
I'm going to get caught up on that this weekend before the finale,
like I said,
because I loved the first two, and I just haven't had the time. But yeah, that's the third day. That's HBO. Yeah, everybody should watch
and
it.
They did something cool a few weeks ago before the first episode of this second part of this winter part. They had fall, autumn, and it was not on. In fact, I looked for it because I thought it was just like an internet release video. It wasn't. It was this experimental film production thing that they did on Facebook Live. It was a 12-hour show, basically. A live, one-shot show that lasted for 12 hours. And it was done live from this experimental film company or production company, I think called Punch Drunk or something like that.
Hmm.
I've skimmed through it because I couldn't devote myself for 12 hours to watch
it. No.
It is like, when you talk about 12 hours, like some of it is literally, like I think there's a two-hour shot of Jude Law just taking a nap. There's a 1.5 hour shot of him digging a hole.
Oh my God.
There's the
very
intro.
Twin
is like
Peaks.
The intro is like a 12 or 13 minute shot of like a drone shot coming across the causeway. So this is all like a one shot thing. It's not like documentary style. Like it's a production. Like it's the actors. There's characters that are.
And
doing
you can
it,
find it on YouTube.
It's on Facebook Live. I'm sure there's YouTube versions of it. But it's basically the day of the festival that they keep building to in the first 3 days. And you should at least before you start, like when you end episode three,
okay,
before you watch episode four, at least Google like the recap of it. So you kind of find out what's happened. I don't know how important. I mean, I'm sure they'll probably fill in the plot point because there's really only like one or two major plot things that happen, but I'm sure they'll be filled in at some point. But it was interesting, like to find out that that's so it was like a 12-hour
why
thing
did they
that they
do
did.
It that way do you think ago. why I mean that's such a weird
I have no idea. Like I said, it's just this experimental way to like, hey, in fact, you know, if there was ever a time to try to do something like that, I guess this is the time to do it, right?
Yeah.
When people are going to sit around and maybe watch something like that.
I do love the concept of something being shot all in one take, never, you know, never cutting. When you stumble across a movie that's done that, there's some movies out there that, and they're very interesting to watch. There's one, I don't want to digress too much here, but there's one movie I love. It's called Russian Ark. It's been a while since I've seen it, but it was kind of groundbreaking. I'm sure it's out there and easy to find. It's beautiful, and it is all one take, and you can clearly tell how it's done, you know, with a rotating camera around the room, but no cuts in it at all, and it's just a gorgeous, wonderfully produced movie. Amazing how they did it. Russian Ark. Check it out.
So third day, it's a good one on HBO. I've been on an HBO kick. I've also caught up on Lovecraft Country.
I'm behind on that too, but liking it.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm on and off about it. I'm hot and cold,
I'm
depending on the episode. It's a show. Now, I know it's based off a novel, and I'm pretty sure the novel is not a – in fact, when I looked up just to kind of get an overview of it, I think the novel is an anthology. So I think in the novel, each section is like different people, whereas
– But the people in the show, it's all their own adventure.
But it's still – you can tell like it's an anthology but with like a continuing cross through. And I feel like that works sometimes and doesn't work other times with this show. There are a couple episodes that feel almost too one-off-ish. And I'm not as interested in what's going on that time. I also am – and, you know, we've gone through our Watchmen. In fact, you know, if you're interested in Watchmen, which I would say without Watchmen, this show wouldn't have happened. HBO has really gone all in with, I would call it the pro-black television show concept of, you know, Jordan Peele doing this, even though Damon Lindelof, who is not black, did Watchmen. It was a, you know, it was touted as this is a black show, you know, based off a black person perspective. And I really loved Watchmen. We talked about that and how we thought how it did such a good job of, of showing race relations. I think this goes maybe a little too heavy-handed, a little bit more so than Watchmen did. And that doesn't always turn me off on it, but it's just too glaring sometimes a little bit with this. You know,
it's because of the period that it's set in.
White character in it is a bad guy. There's no redeeming qualities at all to anybody, and I find that a little heavy-handed. And
well, the two leads, Tick and what's the woman's name?
Letty.
Those two are amazing. And I was sad. I mean, spoiler. I mean, Courtney B. Vance's character was my favorite. And then all of a sudden, he did. I mean, that's early on. So, spoiler. But I still love Tick and Letty. So, no, I feel like those two are doing a great job carrying the show. Everybody else, I agree. Now, I like Letty's sister. I did love the episode where she was able to be a white woman.
Then
the big reveal at the end of that was that, in fact, that's the last episode I watched, but I loved
that's a good
it
episode
such a good episode.
There is, in fact, the episode you said you started and never, you almost turned it off as soon as it started because you just weren't sure, you weren't into it.
I didn't want a flashback
after that. The next episode after that is when Tick is in the war in Korea,
flashback,
and it reminded me a lot of in Watchmen when they brought in the Vietnam stuff,
because
it did go into more of the race relations of not just black and white, but even of black and Asian people and how they have issues with themselves and how, you know, so I like it brings in that. And Jamie Chung, who is kind of the lead of that episode, of the female lead, and that is amazing in it. And it really is a – you need to watch that episode. I can't remember which episode that's
called. I think
it's
episode five or six. That's about where I am.
Yeah.
I think this is a show that did not need 10 episodes. I think they've stretched it out a bit too. So I'm kind of like – I'm in fatigue with it. I'll go back to it for sure, though, because I do like it.
The latest episode, in fact, last week's episode, was very Watchmen-esque because it goes back to the 1920 Tulsa riots.
Oh.
21 Tulsa riots.
Okay.
We find out that Tick's dad, Omar, from The Wire, I can't think of the actor's name, but he was a child during that time, so it was very reminiscent of that. In fact, I even wondered if the set they were on or whatever street they were on was the same street they might have filmed Watchmen when they did those scenes.
Does it explain why he's a member of that weird like Adam
no
sect
no
thing?
We haven't really fully gotten into that yet. Well, it's just like his family was always into it,
right? So you find out but that he's not a good guy. He's not good.
Well, you find out a lot of problems in the next few episodes about his past, which fits with him. It's a good series. I like it overall. In fact, even the things I said don't keep me from watching it. There's one or two episodes where I just didn't get into them. There's one where Hippolyta, who is
I like her. Yeah,
George's wife.
Right.
So there's an episode with her where she's the main person in it, and it was it was too weird for me. Let's put it this way. She goes into like other dimensions and stuff.
Yes. And I've heard that's in the book too.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I just didn't care for it on screen. I don't know. It just didn't fit with me. Cause the whole time I'm like, what does this have to do with the plot? And again, I'm sure some of the stuff goes over my head.
It's all homage to H.P. Lovecraft stuff. And it is all fantastical. I think it's a lot like what's happening in their heads when they're trying to cope with something or, you know, it's like weird.
There was a couple episodes.
Honestly, the first two episodes,
I got back into it.
And the first two episodes were so good. Like the first episode where the end, when they're running from those like werewolf vampire things was so crazy. I was hoping every episode was going to be like that. In fact, with that episode, I was like, all right, we got a little bit of like American Horror Story going on here. It's kind of how it felt.
Yeah, and there's other episodes that go back into that, and then there's some that get really sci-fi, and there's some that don't have any sci-fi. Huh. There's some that are like, there's one that's like a real ghost story-ish type thing. So yeah, it goes back and forth.
The Haunted House one, yeah.
I guess, that one, and there's another one later where there's like some ghost little like, I don't know what the appropriate word for these like little black children, like almost minstrel characters are. That like they're like, but they're little like demon characters that follow around the little girl. It's creepy as hell. It's almost to me, it's like the show's. And again, I get that maybe the book was written like this, but it's like there's too many styles going on that like I just don't feel like there's the cohesion that should be there.
For
the show overhead. Yeah. But I'm looking forward to the finale. I want to see where it goes. I don't know. Is this supposed to be a miniseries, or are they supposed to be setting this up to last for a while? I don't know.
I have not heard one way or the other. My assumption is, you know, it'll get picked up. But, you know, with COVID, who knows? TV, you know, promises, you know? I mean, they'll tell a show, oh, sure. Sure, Glow, you're going to get a fourth and final season. And then guess what? Nope. Glow's been canceled. And they've been doing that with tons of shows. I mean, I'm just super bitter because of Glow, because I was like, come on, figure it out. Give us something. Give us a final movie or something to wrap that up.
Right.
You know,
and obviously this is a completely different reason, but it reminds me a lot of the, I think it was 2004 or 2005 when that big writer strike happened for like 6 months. And then like the same kind of thing happened where it was like all these shows that would like, they got canceled because it was like, you can't keep the actors in their contracts if they're not working and all this stuff. And I hate it because of that. But like I said, I'm looking forward to see how they wrap the season up, Lovecraft Country. And again, I know this will come out after that, but that's coming up here in a couple of days, so I'll look forward to that. The other two shows that I really got into, I know you haven't watched them, so I'll just kind of give you my just general thoughts on them. Raised by Wolves, which is also on HBO Max, not HBO, so I know you don't have the Max.
No.
But Raised by Wolves is a Ridley Scott show. And it is such a Ridley Scott show. I don't know how much of a Ridley Scott, like, Aliens universe fan you are. But especially his last two, the two newest ones he's made that are from the Aliens universe. I can't think of what they're
called. I never saw them.
They got Michael Fassbender in them. And
right.
So this is just, like, super duper sci-fi. It's about, like, 20, 30 something, or I don't know, 100, 200, 300 years in the future, where basically religion's gotten so big that like there's this religion versus these atheist groups who have gotten in a civil war and have destroyed the world. Mm-hmm. And so both groups have sent off humans to this other planet, but the first group that gets there are these two androids from the atheist group, and they have these human embryos and they grow these kids. And then the religious group gets there and the androids take some of their kids and try to raise them. But I don't even know how to explain it. It's just, it's on a different planet. It's in the future. Yeah. It's robots and weirdo. There's this huge like meta commentary or allegory throughout the whole thing about religion versus atheism, which I don't even I don't know what the point is. I don't know if the point is that if this whole thing is Ridley Scott saying that the world should be atheist or something. That seems like what the overall message of the show is for some reason, which I don't like about it. But it's just a really cool show. Like the action in it and the story in it is really cool. But I have no idea what the hell's going on half the time. It is like hardcore sci-fi. So if you are into super sci-fi stuff and like
for sure.
detailed and like, you know, this is the show for you. So, and there's, like I said, there's robots, there's alien creatures, there's a giant flying snake at the end. For some reason, I have no idea why, there's cults in it. Like, so yeah, it's if you,
I for sure want to watch it. I know it's on my list. Yeah. As soon as I solve this HBO Max conundrum, I know I'm not alone, you know, hit me up. Weirdest let us know.
And then the last thing
together. Yeah. What else?
I watched and binged was Utopia on Amazon Prime. This show again is one where I'm sure if I start trying to explain it, I'll either ramble for 30 minutes or I won't say it right. But basically there is some comic geeks who find this comic that somehow has clues to it, that there is a worldwide conspiracy of creating viruses to kill people throughout the world as some sort of culling or, you know, like population control. And basically the show is that these people slowly find out, or not so slowly, fairly quickly find out that this conspiracy is completely real and way worse than they could ever imagine. And it's supposed to be a black comedy, and there are some parts that are kind of funny, but this show is one of the most extremely insane shows I've ever seen.
Whoa.
Some of the stuff that happens in this is just like, in fact, I've seen a lot of people who have started watching this and they get to the same point. And I will say, and this isn't it's a half spoiler, but it's something that if you've read any review about this, you'll see. If you have a problem with like people being killed completely unnecessarily, you're not going to like the show. When I say people, I mean like children, things like that. There are no limits to what this government or not government, this group that they're the main kind of bad guys will do to
nobody's
to
safe
point and to,
like The Walking Dead. Nobody's safe.
But I will say, as disturbing as some of the things are, to me, they're never gratuitous, and there's no like you don't see like, you know, anything that's like super extreme happens off screen, so you're not seeing like, you know, a child getting shot in the face or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But there are implications of children being hurt based off the purpose of this group, and like I said, it's based off a British show, and apparently the British show is a little bit more on the comedy side of the black comedy. And there are parts of this that are like awkwardly funny, like, and that's, I think, I can't remember if it was Roby or someone else who gave me this criticism of the show that said like they felt that the characters don't react like real people would when people get shot in front of them and stuff like that, like freaking out. And I'm like, well, that's kind of the point, is that it's like almost supposed to be absurdist a little bit to these people who are so involved in this hunting for the conspiracy that like these crazy things happen to them, and they kind of just like, well, what's the next part of the mystery? And so I got hooked. It's I think it's 8 episodes, so it's very short. Yeah.
And they're are they hour episodes or 30 minute episodes?
Yeah, they're about an hour each. And I got to, if you make it the first episode, I wasn't sure what I thought about it. The second episode, I was a little bit in and I still wasn't sure. In fact, the second episode, I was about to be like, I don't really know. I kind of like it, but I'm not sure. The twist, and I'll say it's a twist, but what happens at the end of the second episode made me realize like, oh, I'm into the show, because it's one of those things where it's like, nobody's safe. Anything can happen. And you never know what's going to. And in fact, each episode, there's like almost a twist in almost every episode moving forward from episode 2, where it's like something that you thought was what it is completely ends up being different. And it really just, I just enjoyed it. Like I said, it was a fun, just like 2-day binge. And just insanity, a lot of craziness in it. So it was good.
Well, so I guess as soon as I get caught up on third day, I might go to that next before finishing Lovecraft Country. That, because it's definitely on my list. I just haven't. I know once I start, I've got to dedicate time, because I'm not going to want to stop. And I just don't have the time for a binge right now. But maybe this weekend. The only show that I have managed to watch, other than Fargo and The Boys, the only show that's new that I haven't talked about before is Schitt's Creek. The surprise little comedy that I never knew I'd like as much as I do. And this is, of course, right on the heels of the Emmy, the winners. That was like forever ago now in the grand scheme of things. But since the Emmys aired and we haven't podcasted since then, of course, I want to just call it that we, you know, of course, nailed it, that Watchmen would sweep all the limited series categories. Right. I totally called it that Succession would win and did win for best drama, as it should have, as well as Jeremy Strong, who plays Kendall on Succession, and he won for best actor and completely well-deserved. I mean, I know you don't watch that show. I wish you did. Maybe squeak that one in amongst your binges, because the Succession is a great show. And then your Zendaya winning for Euphoria. Yeah, that was a bit of a shocker. I don't watch that show, so I can't speak to if that was just the, I think the Emmys are a little skewed in how they award stuff. And like, we've already talked about
how she's good in it. She's good.
Yeah. But is she better than all those other actresses she was up against? Is she better than Jodie Comer? Is she better than Sandra Oh? I don't think so. So I've got my doubts, but
I'm thinking HBO just paid out a lot of money this year.
I think so. However, when Schitt's Creek pretty much swept the comedy category, and of course I know Catherine O'Hara and Eugene Levy, and it's like, of course I've been aware of this show, I just have never sat down and watched it. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna give this show a try. Well, this is now my go-to, like what I watch every night right before I go to bed, because it's like 20-22 minutes, you know, on Netflix. And they're so funny. They're very tightly written. You would think this concept would get old or grow stale, but somehow they keep it funny. They keep it going. It's essentially these super, super, just ridiculously rich people, family, who really don't even know the concept of what it's like to not be rich. They basically lose all their money aside from this one town, this little ghost sleeper town thing that they own called Schitt's Creek. So they are because they own the town, they have to move there. It's the only thing they're allowed to keep. And they have to live in this like rundown motel there. And the mayor of the town is played by Chris Elliott, who is still one of the funniest people on the face of the earth. And his name is Roland Schitt. He's the mayor of Schitt's Creek. Roland Schitt's his name. That's pretty much all you need to know. I mean, it is so funny in a smart but very stupid way. It's stupid done intelligently, so I like it, and absolutely do love the kids on the show. They're bratty in this, like, because they're fully grown kids, and they don't try to act like these are fully grown people playing teenage kids like they do on so many shows. They fully acknowledge that these are their fully grown kids living with them like they are children, that are in their 30s though, and are just spoiled beyond words and indifferent to their parents, like not in the rude in your face the way it was like on Married with Children, but here are still two kids being just shit asses to their parents, and their parents are so out of touch, they're not even aware half the time. And Catherine O'Hara as Moira is the best. I am sure the Emmy that was bestowed upon her this year, as well as all the Emmys this show won, were warranted, because it is, I can't say enough. Everybody, if you like comedy, if you like other comedy shows that we have talked about on this show, then you will like Schitt's Creek. It is a good, funny show, keeps it light. It just start to finish, very funny, laugh out loud moments in every episode.
Cool. This will have to be when I'm done with my 47th rewatch of The Office here in a couple of weeks. I'll make sure this keeps me from going straight back to Parks and Rec. I'll put this in between.
Yeah, I haven't even gone back to Parks and Rec. But I will. All right. Well, let's talk about, but before we wrap up, let's talk about the meat and potatoes that we came here to talk about.
There you go.
Let's talk about The Boys first. Is that good? Have you finished The Boys?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, I watched it in like a and I've been watching, obviously, I watched it in like a day or two, but then I forgot. No, it came out like week by week.
Yes.
So, yes, I did just finish it. The last episode was what, last Friday, right?
Yes.
So,
yeah. That's right. That's right. As we record this, the last episode dropped a week ago. And I did hear that their intention was not to release them week to week like that, but it was due to COVID production. So they were literally still working on episodes every week right before they were released. So I was fine with the week to week format. I kept it going, kept me from binging it. That's for sure. Of course, this is one that my husband and I watch together. So we would get up we'd either watch it Friday night or Saturday morning, you know, of course, every week.
I ended up watching most of them. You know, they release on Friday night. They come out Thursday night every night.
Right, like at like 2 a.m.
So I'd remember all of a sudden, like on Thursday night, I'm looking for something to watch before I go to bed, and I'll be like, oh, yeah, the new boys. So I'd watch most of them Thursday nights.
This season,
they aren't supposed to come out until Friday.
I don't know if I'm ready to say this season was better than season one, but it is definitely as good as season one. I loved it. I loved the character development. I loved a lot of stuff that they did, like with the Deep and A-Train and the Scientology knockoff church.
Yeah, yeah.
I loved the reformation of the Deep and all of that. Loved the and try not to give out, we will try not to spoil it too much. Hopefully anybody who's listening to this has watched it all, and if you haven't, I'm gonna give my PSA: stop what you're doing, go watch The Boys, and come back to us, because believe me, this is a show that you do not want to fall behind on. It is so good. Stay current with it. It is all of the characters this year, I loved what they did with Kimiko and her brother and how that developed. I loved Stormfront, the storyline with Stormfront, and especially Stormfront and Homelander's relationship. Just was fantastic to me.
Yes, their love scene is hilarious.
Homelander's descent into madness, I mean, it was there at the end. I enjoyed that. I enjoy loving to hate Homelander. You know, he does.
Yeah.
He is the character that you just love to hate. I mean, no one since J.R. Ewing has there been such a, you know.
You did kind of say this, but let's say this, because I do want to talk about a couple specific things.
Sure.
So, like, spoiler alert, spoiler alert,
okay,
spoiler
let's
alert,
do
spoiler
it.
Alert.
Yeah,
so
spoiler alert.
It's been out, like, you've seen it, hopefully. So if you haven't, please, you know, go ahead and you can come back to this part of the show later, or skip ahead about 5 minutes or 6 minutes or so. The scene where he goes and you think somehow Elizabeth Shue is still there.
Oh yeah.
And he's really talking with, I don't remember. It's not, his name's not the Camille. What's his name? The guy that can change.
Shapeshift guy. I don't remember. Shapeshifter. Yeah. I think that is his name.
Is that his name? Shapeshifter. So when you find out he has him basically turning into her.
Oh yeah.
And already you're kind of, but then when he turns into Homelander and you think that he's about to let him get blown by Shapeshifter as himself, and he's like, it's not gay because it's you, right? Like, it's like masturbation. That was already probably the weirdest and creepiest scene, but then when he, you know, strangles him to death as Homelander, and you see him almost kill himself in that sense, you know, like he's killing himself. That was, that actor is great, and he does such a good job of showing that the madness behind that fake facade, but that fake facade is just slowly, or I mean, not even slowly at this point, just very hardly there anymore.
Oh yeah.
And that scene where you think all of a sudden he destroys the entire crowd of people with his laser eyes, and then you realize that's just what he's thinking while he's at that press conference.
Yes.
He just wants to kill everybody.
Yeah.
And you see just how much he hates everything and everyone, but then at the same time, he loves the attention, you know, he can't, because he doesn't know what he is without that.
He's a tragic character, because there is a part of you that is still like, you know, the childhood he had, you know, how he was raised, you know, how he was basically created to be this person that he is, with never shown any love. All that was established in season one. So you feel a little bit for him, but he's so horrible. I mean, you just can't. It's a great character. And I just love about this show that they have the heroes, the seven, always in costume. So just like hanging out in the public, you know, or hanging out in their house, or just like, I'm going to walk over and see my son now. But, you know, here I'm always just in my costume. Even Maeve, there was a couple times she was in casual clothes, but there were other times too when she was just hanging out in her apartment, smoking a joint in her costume, which I just love that touch. The Deep, you know, and A-Train hanging out at the church, always in costume. And I think that that is such, because that is such a comic book thing, right? Yeah. So I love that touch that they do. That's just a little thing. And I also loved they were doing the movie within, like a show within a show. This was a movie within a show. They're filming, you know, a movie, the cinematic universe of these seven.
Yeah.
So we get some scenes of them actually starring in this, you know, movies about themselves and filming the movies. And for the first time, the seven has three women on it. So they develop this whole like slogan, girls get it done. And it's real cheesy. And you think, oh God, here we go. SJW shit. Going to be shoved down our throat. But it's almost like they make fun of it because when the girls do end up kicking the shit out of
Stormfront.
No, is it? It's Black. Was it Stormfront or was it Black Noir?
Well, Starlight and then Maeve comes and saves her from Black Noir.
But when they're all three standing around kicking
Stormfront.
Okay. And then the guys are off to the side watching it and they're like, I guess girls really do get it done. That was a great line. It was so. Because of course girls get it done and always have. And we don't need, you know, social justice warriors or shows specifically made to let us know that. So I love the meta commentary, like the joke that it was making there.
You guys have seen all the Avengers movies, right?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's like, you know, it's almost making fun of those. There's the one scene in Infinity War where, like, Black Widow, the girl from Black Panther, who's the name I got, the one from
Michonne.
Yeah, and Scarlet Witch all fight, you know. Yeah. But then there's that one, which actually kind of works, but then there's that scene in Endgame where, like, all the women characters like show up and like she's not alone, and it's like it's so cheesy.
It is cheesy.
Like,
it is
in there. Like even people who are proponents of that have come out and said like, yeah, that's a little forced. Mm-hmm. And so I like how they were making fun of that, and that's what the whole show's about, right? Making fun of the superhero genre in general.
100%. And it does it brilliantly.
I love the episode with all of, where they go into the like asylum or the hospital or whatever it is with all the villains they're creating.
Where Lamplighter is. Oh, my God. Yes. Yeah.
Which I was, when I saw him, I was like, Iceman, nice, you know, from X-Men, Sean Astin. Or not Sean Astin, that would be rude.
No.
Sean Ashmore.
Yeah.
Is that what it's Sean Astin?
I don't know his name, but I know who you
mean, yes. Yeah, Lamplighter. And then, but I love, obviously, you have Love Sausage with his giant octopus penis thing, which was weird.
He was in the comics, too. He was in the comics.
Okay. I love the one, like, really the chick who was just exploding people.
Right. So that's what I was going to say. I loved the exploding heads, and I loved the reveal, because we get an exploding head kind of in the beginning of this series.
Right.
Where they're meeting with the CIA agent. All of a sudden, her head explodes. I love they're driving off, and Huey's like, is my head going to explode? Because they don't know why. And then we get the courtroom scene where tons of heads explode, and it is disgusting.
And do we assume, because does the
We didn't
one,
know anybody. Know, we didn't know. I didn't know. I thought it was Vought.
But does that girl, words we're doing. So the shaved head girl who was exploding people, she ends up walking off in that episode. And I feel like, does she ever come back later? Or do we assume that?
No, we'll see her in season 3. She's hitchhiking
But we were kind of to assume that she was the one maybe who was doing that, right? Because I feel like they set it up.
No, they showed us who's doing it.
I know who we now know who did it. But I felt like in that moment, my thought was, as soon as I saw her explode people in there, I was like, oh, she's the one that was doing the head exploding. And then I thought they had her doing the courtroom exploding.
But so she that was my assumption. Oh, they had her doing it like remotely. That from she was like the, a red herring. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, but then, of course, yes, that made the twist at the end that much better.
Yeah.
And I won't spoil the twist at the end. But yes, I will say that I kept thinking when I saw that courtroom scene, I'm like, oh, this girl who wandered off, she's found these people and she's just blown them up from somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Or Vaught was controlling her. Controlling her still,
yeah. So yeah, I like that they almost kind of put that as a curve. And then yes, you find out who's actually doing that at the end, which was a big curve. Although I feel like as soon as it was about to happen at the end, I was like, I kind of called it almost. Like I was like, oh, I bet she's gonna.
Oh, I did not see it coming at all. I like the setup for season three. I like, you know, they're going to give everybody just this moment of happiness, with the exception of Butcher. I have to say, I really did not like the Butcher trying to rescue his wife the whole time. I hated that actress. I thought she did a terrible job. I hated the whole, I never bought the Becca Butcher romance. I never bought any chemistry between them. It annoyed me. It got in the way of like other stuff I felt like was more important. And it was always like, back to Becca. Oh God, here we go. Just freaking leave that bitch. So yeah, don't want to spoil what happens with her either. But I was like, fucking finally. She was the only complaint I had about the whole season. Any scene she was in just grated on my nerves because I thought she did such a terrible job.
Well, and I know they finally they fully confirmed it this season. But my whole thought, even at the end of last season, when we find out she's still alive, and then even through most of the episodes of this one, I kept thinking like, did Homelander actually rape her, or did she actually come on to him? And they had no, because then they say, like, I feel like they confirm at some point that he did rape her. Like, I think even
I think he coerced her. I mean, I guess that is rape. I can't really say, you know, it wasn't really rape, but it was rape. But I think he kind of like, you know, like threatened her. I don't remember. They showed it at that Christmas party flashback in season one. I want to say no. They think he did say if you. I don't remember, Dean. God, let us know. Write to us and let us know.
But like I said, to me, it felt like if she was alive for that long and never tried to reach out to him.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. So, yeah, I felt the same way. It seemed like it was almost like, well, we had that storyline, so we got to keep it going. I would have almost rather just that he – I don't know. It made me feel like this whole season could have happened without – them ever saying that she was still alive with the kid, and it would have worked almost the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was the one way though, that like it made them like want to help him again in the beginning. Cause remember they all like hated him.
Yeah.
And then once they found out that his wife was still alive and they were kind of back into it, but I don't know.
Well, Huey and Starlight and Frenchie and Kimiko and Mother's Milk just remained to be my favorite characters. They were just flawless throughout. I mean, Mother's Milk had some real zingers. He had some real funny comedic moments. Huey, always funny.
Yeah.
That actor is really, really good. I can't say enough about how much I enjoy the show. Already renewed for a season four ahead of its season three premiere. So that's good. I hope it keeps going for a long time. They're certainly stretching out the show from its source material. And that I like. Well, they kind of did that with Preacher too. So, oh, and my God, we didn't even talk about Gus Fring.
Yeah.
How good was he? I mean, I know his name's Giancarlo Esposito. And I don't remember his name on the show. I'm sorry, but I just had to call him Gus Fring because he was so Gus Fring. He was so menacing. Yes. He's the only one that could stand up to Homelander. And I caught myself a couple times going, well, of course the only person who's not afraid of Homelander is Gus Fring. Of course.
And it did make sense, too, where for a while you thought he might be the one who had the head. Because, you know, why else would he not be afraid of everyone? Because it really is like, well, why doesn't Homelander just kill him at some point?
Right, but it's really just that he is just a badass. He's just got balls of steel.
Yeah, I like that.
He controls the money.
I don't think I like Stormfront.
Well, I don't know that she's coming back.
Whoops, yeah, spoiler. I don't know either, although they didn't actually show her die.
Right, but they showed her pretty...
No, they did, and but almost to the point where I actually thought I was going to, when they were kind of showing the epilogue of, like, mm-hmm. you know, the different characters.
Yeah, I thought the way were her,
like, the way were her, you know, how she ends up, and I don't know if you're a Star Wars fan or not, but, like, it was very much like, are they going to Darth Vader her? Because, right. like, I feel like they easily, like, she almost looked like him in episode 3 at the end of how the, how
she
Anakin
looked exactly like
Skywalker
him. They probably used the same cadaver.
The same dummy. So I feel like they could, like, if they bring her back as, like, some cyborg thing, it wouldn't surprise me. Mm. I guess I did like the, I
liked
I
her character.
Her,
I mean, she was
her
horrible.
Her storyline, I felt, got stretched in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Like, I guess maybe it played into it, but where it seemed like they were going with her for the first few episodes wasn't anywhere where they went with her toward the end.
Yeah, it was
I
good,
like though. That twist, I guess, because I like the connection to the Nazi stuff. I didn't like, though, again, I almost felt, and maybe it wasn't at all, but I did kind of feel like, and it makes sense, of course, that she ends up being a Nazi, but mm-hmm. her whole thing with, you know, we're going to make America safe again, I kind of like, that made me eye roll a little bit, where it was like, okay, yes, you're now turning... now Homelander is supposed to be like a Trumpian character.
I know,
or
but
whatever.
It was tongue in cheek.
Like
a... It was, I know, I don't, it was tongue in cheek, but of course people will take it that way. You know, in the comic book, Stormfront was a man, but he was impervious like that. And he was a Nazi. And that was a big reveal that he, you know, couldn't be killed and had been alive for all these years. And, you know, was also trying to, still keep the Aryan race kind of philosophy going. So he was hyper bad in the comic. So I like the gender switch they did. I love how she was really the only one that figured out really how to manipulate Homelander. I mean,
oh yeah,
when sure. he bought the roses for her and he was really like super happy for the first time, he was actually going to give a woman roses that you could see it in his face.
Burns,
like,
down her trailer.
Yeah, like, oh, he was so, yeah, he was so, and then when she did stood him up or whatever and,
electrical
oh God,
fire.
It was just great. It was, I loved every minute of it. Can't speak enough about the boys. I'm trying to remember, of course, the big whale moment, they showed in the trailer. So we knew it was coming, but boy, was it phenomenal, especially the outcome of going through the whale, like when Huey was still stuck inside and was so disgusting. I'm just going to stay in here. I could totally understand that. That's probably how I would have been. Like when you go through something like that, it's like, you know what? I'm good. I'm just going to stay here in the guts. I mean, it was awesome. That the CGI, the effects on that were really good.
Yeah, it was a good season for sure.
All right. Anything else about the boys, or should we talk about the best show ever right now? Oh my God, it's back. Are we ready?
Yep.
This is a true story. Out of respect for the dead, the names have been changed. Out of the respect for the living, everything has been told exactly the way it is. I know I'm not doing it right. But
I was just saying, I think you gotta reverse those two.
But. Yeah, probably. The minute I see those words come on my screen, I am like back in my happy place. And that is, of course, Fargo. It's back. It's better than ever. It's amazing. Talk about another heavily black show, another show that's really done this great, amazing black ensemble cast without being like, oh, you know, oh, we're a black show. You know, it's done it just perfectly, beautifully. Well, and you understand.
It has a lot of Italian, you know, Italian actors playing these Italian mobsters, as opposed, you know, obviously Schwartzman's supposed to be an American guy, but the brother, he's in it. In fact, I looked him up, I'm like, who is this guy? Because he's my favorite character on the show.
Oh, Crazy Eyes?
The older brother.
I know. Gertano or Gattano, I can't say his name.
Yeah.
Great Italian name. I should be able to say it. Oh my God. And you understand we are seeing a Mike Milligan origin story here. You understand the little boy with the rabbi is Mike Milligan.
I was going to ask you who, like what the kid, so I gotta tell, I've never seen season 2 or season 3.
What?
I only started, I've seen like two.
Season two is Gene Smart and.
Yeah, I've seen like two episodes of it. Once I saw the UFO, I got turned off on it.
Oh, forget the UFO. It is a nothing plot point. Go back and watch season two because you've got to see Bokeem Woodbine as Mike Milligan. Because what we are seeing here, Chris Rock's son is going to grow up to become Mike Milligan. I was like, as soon as we learned the rabbi, let me just back it up a little bit. Here we have this show being told through the eyes of this girl, Ethel Rita, who's just kind of on the periphery, seeing it all, living at her with her parents in their funeral home. Right. Her father is white. Her mother is black. Her father is a complete dumbass. If anything, by the last episode, he's a complete idiot. So he's, you know, and then they've got her mother has this sister who's an escaped convict and with her lover, they've escaped from prison and they're on the lam and they're just the bumbling idiots that just are like the foils. There's always this formulaic character design in Fargo, right? So there's always these two bumbling idiots on the periphery that don't really have anything to do with the story, but somehow managed to get tangled up in it. And that's these two women in this season. And oh my God, and then there's the nurse who lives across the street from Ethel Rita and clearly has the bit of the Munchausens or something, enjoys killing her patients, but thinks she's doing it to help them.
Yeah, angel of death nurse.
Yes, and what was I going to say about her? Well, I'll come back to her. So we've got all of them, and then we have these two warring families, and we got to see the background of how they would exchange, like mobster families or mafia families, how they would exchange kids, kind of Game of Thrones style, right? Like how Eddard Stark raised Theon Greyjoy.
Right.
So they exchange kids to keep the peace or whatnot. So
which never seems to work out.
Of course not. But we see this one character, his progression of how he was Irish, but he felt let down because he was given up twice.
Twice.
And instead of the youngest, yes. So he sided with this Italian family and is now tight with the Italians, even though he killed his own father and all this. So he's a very interesting character, but his name is Milligan. Right. And so that's what astute Fargo viewers will catch on to is the fact that now he's kind of the ward or he's taken on Chris Rock's youngest son as his ward, or he's kind of looking after him. You can see there's already a bond, and that kid's name is Satchel, right? So you can see there's a bond forming between Satchel and Milligan. And it is just evident that this kid is going to obviously turn on his family and evolve into becoming and take on the name Mike Milligan. I'm calling it 100%. That's who he is.
So that's season two?
Season two. It's set in the 70s. Okay. All the timeline matches up.
Well, yeah, no, like I said, I watched the first two episodes of it. So I will make sure, because that starts off with like Kieran Culkin, like, killing a bunch of people, right, in a diner or something like that.
Okay.
And get, like, hit by a car or something.
It's been like 6 years. I don't remember.
Okay, anyway.
So I remember Bokeem Woodbine because he's so memorable. I remember Gene Smart. I remember.
All right, that's going on my priority list. Then. Okay, that's my priority. That's Gene Smart from Legion.
Well, but oh my God, why can I not remember her name? The blonde girl that couldn't touch anybody in Legion.
Yeah.
She's in it,
how
too.
How do I not know?
I know.
Sydney?
Yeah, Sydney.
Sydney, yeah.
I can't think of her name in real life either. I keep wanting to call her Rachel.
All right,
or something.
That goes to my priority list, then. I will make sure I finish that before I watch the next episode of Fargo season four.
But can we talk about Chris Rock and how – I mean, this is Chris Rock's awesome Emmy nomination right here. He is awesome. The ensemble cast, yes, Jason Schwartzman, incredible. Yes, the guys playing the Italian mob, they're all really good. I feel like it's like a little mini Sopranos going on there. I mean, they're all that caliber of actors. And then we've got the black mafia headed up by Chris Rock, who is just unbelievably incredible. Even when he slips into that Chris Rock talk a little bit, because that's just how he talks.
Does like once or twice.
He slips into it, but it kind of like Steve Carell was doing the little slip up in Space Force, right? Slipping into Michael Scott a little bit. So Chris Rock is slipping a little bit into his stand up, but he pulls out of it and he's just, you know, I mean, I want to look at him and laugh, but he's so serious and good and menacing. And
no, I think they do a good job of making Schwartzman mm-hmm. the comic relief in this episode, because he's so like, even though he's not like bumbling or anything, but he's just so like clearly not the guy who should be heading this Italian mob, Josco. Which is obvious because
Josco's his name, right?
Yeah, which is obvious because his brother knows, but just how he still tries to assert his little man syndrome dominance, and his relationship with the nurse is hilarious. You know, like, wait, who are you again? He keeps forgetting who she is.
So the nurse, Orinetta, I think is how you say her name.
Yeah,
she's fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure what her, how she's going to completely get into the mix. Now, when she made the pie and put Ipecac in it, it's funny because my mom's watching the show too. And of course, you know, called me and was like, what did the nurse put in the pie? I was like, Mom, that's Ipecac. That induces vomiting.
Right.
I was like, but that, so that's what I was like, she might have a little bit of this Munchausen thing going on, because maybe she wants them to eat the pie, get sick, and then she has to go over there and take care of them. So that's where I thought it was going. But as soon as I saw the convict woman eat the pie, and then when I saw them, you know, getting in the coffin together, I was like, okay, I know Noah Hawley loves to do a good puke scene. Now, you didn't see season 3, but season 3 has a disgusting puke scene with David Thewlis. You should really watch season 3 also, because David Thewlis is so good in it. But he has disgusting teeth, and he is disgusting bulimic puker. So we always get all this puking with him and his disgusting close-up teeth. So it's nasty, and you know I don't like the puking. So
the bank robbery scene.
Well, as soon as they get in the coffin, I was like, okay, if she starts puking on her while they're kissing or while they're in this coffin together, I'm probably going to have to skip past it, because I don't think I could handle it. Thank God.
No, that was before she ate it, though. No,
she ate the pie, and they were like, we got to go, we got to go. And I was like, oh, God. And then he was smuggling them out in the coffin, and they were in the coffin together, because they robbed after they got smuggled out. They robbed that place. They robbed Chris.
That's Rock. When she got sick. She got sick when
she got sick while they were robbing them. But that was on the way.
You're right.
Okay, and you're right. I was convinced it was going to happen in the coffin, and that coffin was just going to be a flood of puke, which would be disgusting. But anyway, it was still well done. I mean, you know, if you're going to do grand choreography with puke, in a bank, in a heist. A low-level heist. And that was so gross when she's, like, cleaning all the money in the bathtub, Now, so this last episode also, speaking of, this had a little bit of a weird otherworldly element with that ghost thing.
Yeah, but they had mentioned the curse, like an episode or two ago, that the house was cursed. Or that their family was cursed.
Right. So we see Ethel Rita sees that thing. And then clearly, while the woman is still very, very sick from all this puking, like she's on death's door. And then this ghost thing rises out of the bathtub like it's death coming for her. What was that? I mean, I think I thought it to be kind of symbolic that it's like death's hanging around waiting for, you know, like, and it passed by because, you know, like it passed her by and then she coughed and kind of came back to life.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't like that part of the show. I really don't. That's why, like I said, when I saw the UFO thing in season 2, no matter how little that has to do with it, it made me be like, ugh, like Noah Hollywood, you have to be so weird all the time. Like, because he does a good job, and in fact, the first few episodes of this, I think, are, like, they are so good at being, like, these are Coen brother characters. Like, mm-hmm. in the dialogue, and the filming, and the editing, he does such a good job, but it's like, I don't need to see a random-ass ghost showing up for no reason, which I'm sure there's going to be some connection to it.
Maybe not.
We haven't even mentioned, Yeah, well, if not, then that's why it's dumb. We haven't even mentioned Timothy Oliphant, who's barely been in the show so far, but he is the most Coen brother character in this show.
I know you can't see my notes, but I'm going to hold them up here. I've got Timothy Oliphant written right there so that I didn't forget to mention him, because he shows up as the marshal, and I'm like, is that Timothy Oliphant? I literally watched the credits just to make sure that I was not crazy. I was like,
I didn't recognize him in the episode where he kicks the door down. I didn't recognize him at all. And then the next episode, like, he shows up. I'm like, oh shit, that's Timothy Oliphant. I forgot he was in this.
He's still so dreamy.
Mormon preacher or Mormon pastor or whatever he is.
Yeah.
He's great. And you know, I feel like he is going to be, as there almost always is, this character in Fargo-esque things. Mm-hmm. I assume he's the cop who will stop everything by the end, you know, whether he's the Francis McDormand character or the Colin Hanks / the pregnant woman in the first season. You know, the cops always tend to, like, the good lawmen always tend to make it through and, like, and everything,
and they solve it. They stumble into solving it. They don't really solve it. But what about the cop? The stuttering.
Oh no! That guy's a bad guy though. He's not a good guy.
I love his ticks. I love that he's got to knock 5 times before he can open a door. Like when they first started showing him, I was like, "What is this guy's deal?" But now you can clearly see he's got, like, the "What about Bob?" You know, he's a little bit of that guy.
I love that everyone hates it about it. I love even when he's about to go in, when he's with Oliphant and he's about to go, "This will take me. This will only take me like 20 minutes or something." He starts doing that. He goes, "Is this part of the? Is this like part of the 20 minutes?" We haven't really talked about him, but my favorite character, and I'm going to come back to this scene, actually, my favorite character so far of the show, or just favorite acting, is Gaetano, the older brother of Jason Schwartzman.
Crazy Eyes.
Crazy Eyes. He is the best. The actor's name is Salvatore Esposito, and he's an Italian actor, and he's so, like, his face, he is the scariest looking motherfucker ever, because of those eyes. Like the rage that he just, when he widens those eyes, like, and he kind of has that, like, half smile on his face, looks like at any moment he's going to kill somebody.
Right.
And I love that he's ready to kill somebody at any moment. You know, he has the face off with him and Chris Rock at one point, when Chris Rock comes to see his son, and he's meeting him for the first time. And then this face off where he's already pissed off at his brother and he's coming out pacing. And so Oliphant goes and confronts him and just is, like, screwing around with him. And, you know, like, and he's like, he shows him the badge and everything. He's like, "All right, well, I'm just going to be waiting in the car over there for my friend. If you guys need anything, let me know." Like, and he pulls out the carrots out of his pocket. And oh, it's so good. Like,
he's great. He is. Yeah, and you know who else I love? Dr. Senator.
Yeah, he's awesome.
He's good too. And also, speaking of Legion, our Ptolemy is on it as well. And I can't remember his name either, but he's so good. He's so, like, wants to move up the ranks. You know, he's so eager to please.
In fact, I thought he was definitely going to die when they botched the hit on the kid. I thought for sure they were. In fact, I thought that's what he was going to do. Instead of shooting the kid, he was just going to shoot the driver in the head.
Yeah,
and get it over with. But yeah, that guy's not long for the world. He's not going to make it.
Well, it's definitely going to end very bloody. I don't think there's going to be a lot making it out of this. That's how every Fargo goes. But oh god, I'm loving it. I can't see this show not getting all the Emmys and accolades that it always, you know, all the nominations that it always gets. Noah Hawley, once again, knocking it out of the park. I mean, my love for Noah Hawley. We could just get on in front of our mics and just, like, gush over Noah Hawley again for an hour, like we did so much for Legion. And I'm just like, Noah Hawley, never leave me. Keep making TV shows, please. Everything you do just speaks to me, to my core. It's perfect. Even he's even continuing to do that cool ass split screen, that awesome, you know, direction where we're seeing 3 scenes go on at once and they all merge into one. And I love that. And he's done that throughout Fargo, and he did it in Legion. And I just love it. I just love it.
Yeah, it's a great, great show. I'm really looking forward to see how it ends or how it continues to progress.
Yes, same. And we'll be back and talk about more Fargo, definitely. And we've only been 4 episodes so far, so we've got 10 episodes this season, or maybe 11. I think it's 11. And I love also that they are giving Noah Hawley unlimited airtime. Every episode is a supersized episode. Yeah. My God, when they dropped 2 in one night, and I was already so behind on everything else, and I was like, how am I going to manage to watch 3.5 hours of Fargo? Because that's really what it boiled down to. And every episode has been hour 20 running time, hour 30 running time. And I like when they give showrunners that freedom like that. They did that a lot with Sam Esmail, with Mr. Robot. They've done this with Noah Hawley before with Fargo. Of course, they did it with they do it with Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad. They give those guys, you know, as much running time as they need. And I don't think shows, why should a show have to be forced into an hour-long segment or a 30-minute segment just because that's how they've been done traditionally? So right. I like that the networks are thinking outside of the box and allowing these creators to include all the content and not leave a whole lot on the cutting room floor, hopefully. So we got an email from Roby. Roby, all thank right. you. Roby was on our episode 53, and we want to have you back, Roby. You did not kill Mike TV. We have not watched Big Bang Theory. I don't know that we will. I'm sorry. You hear all these other shows that I have to watch, that I have to get caught up on. My gosh. Maybe. And my problem, Roby, clearly, I'm just speaking to you, Roby. I haven't been able to find those episodes for free, and I will watch them if I can stumble across them for free. But I am not paying for them. Ironically, though, Dean, the night, and I'm going to just go all the way back, rewind us back in time, the night we recorded with Roby, and he assigned us those Big Bang Theory episodes, he tweeted me or DM'd me later on that night and was like, oh my God, one of those episodes is on tonight. You can start right now. But I had already gone to bed, and so I didn't see it until the next day. And sorry, Roby, I never even responded, I don't think. But I'll get back to getting back in touch with you, Roby. But I swear, neither of those episodes have aired in just regular broadcast TV since. I have been watching for them. But anyway, Roby writes us, miketvpodcast@gmail.com. Please send us an email, everybody. Thank you, Roby. Please keep emailing us. He says, by now, I'm sure you're both avid fans of The Big Bang Theory and catching up with the past 12 seasons. And that's why you've been delayed in putting out episodes. Yeah, Roby, right.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's it.
He says, Fargo, enjoying it. Now, that's all. I think, honestly, in fairness, Roby wrote this after only the first 2 episodes of Fargo had premiered. So, Roby, give us some more thoughts on Fargo. I think you got more to say than just enjoying it, right? He says he's rewatching Hell on Wheels. If you missed it, check it out. I don't even remember that show.
I think it's something about trains.
Hell on Wheels, was it a motorcycle show? Like
no, something about like a, it's like back in the old like railroad building days or something like that.
Huh. Okay, maybe. Maybe, Roby.
Maybe Jason Momoa might be in it.
Oh, now you're one talking.
One of his first things, I think. No, that's probably not right.
He was in The Red Road, which I loved. Roby goes on to say, Utopia, wow, really enjoyed. Not comfortable with the death of all the children. Great characters. Cusack has the charisma to pull off his character, especially when he's sitting on the floor with his protege. Lots of great plot twists. Did you enjoy Cusack in this? Because Tim was telling me he doesn't like Cusack. We both love Rainn Wilson. We all love Rainn Wilson, and I think he's great. But how is Cusack?
Cusack gets better as the show goes on, but he is definitely like in his full on like. It's like they let him just go full on like mega villain, like chew the scenery type of thing, because he's just kind of like a crazy. He's like the head of this giant conspiracy, so he's very like. Over the top, chewing the scenery. I liked him. I liked him as he went through it.
Well, yeah. Roby goes on finally to say, The Boys. Holy cow, what a season. His thoughts are, heads pop like zits, whale sushi, you can't teach your son to fly the same way you teach him to swim. So funny. Huey gets lucky. Does he?
Yeah, yeah. They banged quite a few times in the hotel room. But they did okay. last season, so I don't know why he's acting like.
I mean, okay. I don't remember. Maybe. Because they didn't bang while they were down in that bunker. What hotel room?
No, they go to the hotel. And they did that last season.
All right. I don't know. Superhero sex is dangerous. Yeah, that's for sure. And Nazis perfected the use of social media in the 30s. Okay. Do you understand that?
I mean, propaganda, I guess.
I guess. Well, yeah.
Of course, she is. Yeah, I mean, Stormfront is a master of social media in this, too. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very true. Thank you, Roby, for writing to us. And please, everybody, send us your thoughts, your feedback. You're going to continue to hear this in the Radio Labyrinth stream for as long as Tim has us. Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Radio Labyrinth. And we'd just love to hear about TV. You know, we're going to be TV snobs. We're going to talk about the TV that we're watching. But we think that we pick out the best TV to tell you about every week, every other week. We're not going to take another hiatus. We're committed to being back. We're committed right now to doing at least 2 shows per month, maybe more. So we will definitely be back within the next 10 days to 2 weeks. We'll have more Fargo to talk about. I've got some Walking Dead stuff to talk about, so we're saving that for next week or for our next episode. And then hopefully we'll have some I'll be caught up on Utopia and things like that, so we can dive in a little bit more of that. And then there's some other shows coming out, so we'll have some things to talk about. Anything else before we wrap up here, Dean?
You can also find us on Twitter at Rockdale_Tiger or at MikeTV1. Again, just let us know. I know Roby knows this best because he loves my Twitter feed, but if you're, not just watching TV, but it's football season, so every Saturday usually filling up your live stream with college football, so you hit me up if you want to talk football instead of TV, too.
Well, of course, Dean and I are both in, the Atlanta area, so not a lot to root for in the past several years, but dare I squeak it out there here at the very end. Go Braves!
Yeah, hopefully by the time this posts, I think it's gonna happen. Braves are in the World Series, hopefully.
I think so. By the time you're hearing this, maybe it's already determined that the Braves are going to the World Series. Hopefully I haven't jinxed it. But do you remember, Dean, you're probably too young, I think I'm right about this, but the last time the Braves went to the World Series, or the last time they went to the World Series several times in the 90s, I'm sorry, the last time, the only World Series they won, the year that they went and won, was the same year as the baseball strike. So it was a truncated season. So I've always felt like, they won the World Series, but it was a truncated season. Doesn't really count for real. So here we are on another truncated season. They win the World Series. It's like, wow, both the World Series are going to be off of weird oddball seasons.
Asterisk years, yeah.
I mean, just saying, not that my Braves, I mean, I love some Braves. So I love baseball, love the Braves. So I'm not going to knock them. But I'm just saying, I don't like that tarnish. And I'm already counting on the fact that they're going to win. So anyway,
there we go. We'll see.
Yes. So everybody, thank you for listening. Thanks for chatting with us on social media and sending us emails. We'll read your comments on air, so please reach out to us. Please continue watching Fargo. Please watch The Boys if you haven't. And watch Cobra Kai.
Woo!
So, all right, Dean, until next time, I'm Lisa.
And I'm Dean.
And please remember to keep it
thorough. Oh, I almost forgot what it was.
I started to say canon, I know. You keep it canon too, but keep it thorough.